Good morning. The open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for May 6th, 2021 will come to order. We have some late submitted documents. Mr. Vice Chair.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the Commission may consider the late submission of agenda documents number 21-25-A, 21-25-B, and 21-24-A1.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Is there any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much, Mr. Vice Chair. The first item on the agenda is advisory opinion request 2021-15, Tally Up, LLC, submitted by Jeremy Holtzman. We are joined today by Jeremy Holtzman and Justine Schott of Tally Up, LLC, who are available to respond to questions from commissioners. Mr. Holtzman and Ms. Schott, I did see you on the camera earlier, but if you're available, feel free to come on the camera. You are welcome. Thank you for being here today with us. And we also have Theodore Lutz and Robert Knopf from OGC to discuss the matter. So, counsel, if you'd like to proceed.
Great. Thank you, Chair Broussard. Good morning, commissioners. Before you are agenda documents 21-25-A and B. There are draft responses to an advisory opinion request from Tally Up LLC. Tally Up plans to create and sell what it calls voter segments, which are lists of voters defined by customizable search criteria such as age or zip code. The segments would include voters' names and contact information. Tally Up proposes to score its segments using the aggregated contributions of individuals in each segment, as well as the aggregated contributions of other similar individuals. Draft A concludes that under the Act, Tally Up may not aggregate individuals' contributions as proposed because the information would be used to solicit contributions. Draft B concludes that Tally Up's proposed use of commission data would not be sufficient to generate contributions and is permissible under the Act. We receive no comments on the request or the drafts. Thank you, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lutz. Are there any questions for Mr. Holtzman or Ms. Schott or any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Traynor.
I would like to speak to Mr. Holtzman and Ms. Schott just about their request, if I could. And I don't see them on my screen, so I don't know. Are they on?
They are on screen.
Okay, great. So I guess I'll address it to you, Mr. Holtzman, as one of the founders there. You know, the application of the sales and use prohibition that we're talking about in these various drafts is very fact intensive. And I'm not sure that I have enough of the facts about what it is that you're doing at this point to be ready to make a decision, particularly with regard to draft A, which says no to everything that you're doing, because I think some of the things that you're doing may be legitimate. And draft B, I think we make some legal conclusions that are stretched based upon what you have submitted to us. And that's where I think I don't have enough information. So I would start with, could you just kind of give me your elevator pitch about what your overall product is?
Yes, definitely. So what the product does is it scores a segment of voters, and we provide our candidates a voter list that we get from publicly available data. And so they're using these lists of voters to target in their election. What we would like to do with the data here is to score our voter segment based on, you know, aggregated contributions to individual candidates historically, whether they're Democratic or Republican or not. And our method is, the way we do it is that it's all relative. So the way we score one segment compared to another is just based on the relative contributions from voters within that segment or similar voters. So we don't identify any individual voter who's made a contribution, and there's no way to back out into that information because we have some safeguards in place.
Okay. So am I correct then that your product is basically just reports and that it specifically lists the names of individuals who comprise the segment, and that's what the client purchases?
That is correct.
And so does TallyUp offer clients any like voter contact tools, or is it just the list of the names of the individuals?
We provide the list and the names of the individuals, as well as the phone numbers if they come from the voter file. So all of the data that we have on the contact information is from publicly available data that we get from either the state party or regional, the state election division or regional election divisions.
Okay. So would you categorize it as a voter outreach tool or as a fundraising product or both?
It's primarily a data tool for our candidates to strategize on their campaign for a variety of means, including outreach. Yes.
Okay. And are the segments fully customizable by your client? Or do you have for lack of a more technical term, a menu of available segments for clients to choose from?
They are customizable given the fields that we have. So we allow our clients to break out voters based on geographical or demographic fields. And from there, they can segment based on the fields that we provide, but there's only so much segmentation. So it's not, they can't pick and choose individual voters to add to a segment. It's based on, aggregated fields.
Okay. And that kind of gets to my next question then, which is the voter segment score that you describe in your request is based solely on aggregated individual contributions of voters within the segment and the aggregated individual contributions of other similar voters. Or are there other data points besides contribution data that's used in modeling for that score?
For that score, that is the primary field that we are using for the voter segment score.
Okay. Is the voter segment score the only score you offer to predict an individual's likely support of a particular party or particular candidate?
No. So we use historical data, geographical data to determine whether, a specific set of areas based on geography, for example, may lean Democratic or Republican.
Okay, so could a client create a segment based on a segment score rather than variables such as age? So, for example, if I'm running for governor of Texas, could my campaign get a segment of registered Republicans that would be scored at 75?
That's a great question. So no, we do not, the scores are not based, the voter segment scores for contributions are not based on an individual. We provide those after our clients have created an aggregated group of voters. So once they create that aggregated group, then we score them. That way we don't allow them to pick and choose individual voters that they want to solicit to. It's only based on that group.
Okay. So am I correct that all the data you propose to use to create the segments comes from either the FEC or Secretary of State voter files
we had all of our data comes from publicly available sources. We use some census data as well, some other data from the web, from websites.
Okay. So how would you characterize the principal purpose of the use of the FEC data in your product? Like what's your principal purpose for using it?
The principal purpose is to identify voters that would support your candidate for outreach. And the biggest use, honestly, is for independent voters to determine whether they're leaning Republican or Democratic. That is the primary use. It's to understand, who makes up the voting constituency. Now, the outreach and the volunteering and the fundraising is all secondary concerns to determining, who is in what voters live in your area and are going to be voting in your election.
Okay. Do you have a lawyer that you're working with in submitting this request? And the only reason I ask that is because I want to make sure that the commission is being consistent with previous advisory opinions that we've issued. And in looking at it, I think there are probably three advisory opinions that we've done in the past that are very similar to the question that you've asked. And I'd like to be able to delineate those responses from what it is that you're asking today. So,
so we do not have a lawyer that we've been working with on, you know, to prepare for this. We were working with Theodore Lutz. He was one of the people that was helping us.
Okay. Madam Chair, if I could ask a couple of questions of counsel then.
Before sure. One second. Are there any more questions that are directed towards Mr. Schatz or Holtzman? Then go ahead, Commissioner Trainor.
So, Mr. Lutz, would it be possible for you to delineate for me the advisory opinion 1985-16, which is the Weiss opinion? In 2004, we had an NPG opinion. And then this most recent consideration of 2021-01, the Illuminate opinion, and how those may be similar or different from this particular request.
Sure. So the Weiss opinion, I can just briefly describe some of the facts of each of these. The Weiss opinion involved a vendor who brought a pre-existing list of individual names to commission reports and then went through and cross-referenced the commission reports to the pre-existing list and then used that or could have used that to purge out, to remove the non-contributors. So you're left with maybe a reduced list of names that are confirmed donors. And presumably, if you've given before, then you are going to be more likely to give again. So Weiss did not add names into a list, but it did use contribution history of individuals from commission files to create a perhaps more valuable list. Okay. Then you have an NGP, you have a client, a compliance vendor providing to its clients the option to view by reference to commission data what other entities or persons the donors of the clients had also given to, right? So you've got basically the pre-existing names and only a certain universe of names, and then reference to commission contribution histories of who those people have given to. Okay. And then you said Illuminate. Illuminate, I'm a little less familiar with the facts on Illuminate, if only because, was not an AO approved by the commission. Right. But as I understand it, or as I recall, we had a vendor who was working with colleges and universities to help them identify various people to reach out to for various kinds of support. And I believe that they had individuals' names names and contact information from pre-existing sources and university sources. And then they were going to try to figure out, you know, verify that information and then verify what the interests are of potential donors based on commission reports and other sources. So these are all, there's maybe a spectrum of fact patterns in the commission's AOs, and I'm going to talk a little bit more beyond the specific AOs you spoke about. But there's a spectrum of fact patterns, right? And or maybe a dichotomy, depending on how you want to look at it. On the one end, you have the aggregating AOs, the pure aggregating and analysis AOs, CrowdPack, PointBridge, for example. And on the other end, you have the sort of quote list brokering like AOs, where I think that the far end of that would be something where individuals' names are just straight harvested, right, from commission reports. I don't have any names, but I'm going to commission reports and just going to pull them. And then you have sort of a step in, perhaps, would be like Weiss or NGP where we have our names, but we're going to make the names and the information a little more valuable, and we're going to refine it that way.
Okay.
And there's still some reference. And excuse me, I just wanted to add in here that I don't believe Mr. Holtzman intended to say this, but the communications that I was having with him were the typical sort of communications sure. that OGC attorneys have screening pre-ORs.
Yeah, no, I understand that. You'd mentioned Point Bridge Capital, the AO there. Mm-hmm. That was mentioned in their request, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, if I could ask one more question to Mr. Holtzman, I would appreciate it.
Please go ahead.
So, Mr. Holtzman, y'all did mention that advisory request Point Bridge that Mr. Lutz was just talking about. And in that advisory opinion, in looking at it, the requester specifically said that they would not provide or make public any individual contributors' contact information in the marketing of index funds, I believe is what it was. And that they weren't going to use it to solicit contributions. So how is your product like the index fund that was the subject of that advisory opinion?
Sure. Good question. So it's similar in the way that we are aggregating data. So we are aggregating from voters, and we are not making any individual, identifying any individual who contributed. In terms of making sure that we are not identifying individual contributions from voters, there's no way to know from our given segments, which voters contributed. So we're not identifying in any way who gave to any elected official. And you know, there's no way to back out of that information either. So it's similar in that we're aggregating. And then the difference is, you know, we know that some of our clients may be using the segments for solicitations as well as other election purposes. But because we are not identifying the individuals that tie it to the contributions, that's why we're making this ask today.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, if I may ask Mr. Holtzman, if my colleagues were to agree to an extension, would you be willing to give us an extension of time to answer your advisory opinion request, kind of based on some of the answers that you've given today that have kind of given me more facts other than voting on the two drafts that we have right now? Because I don't think that either of the drafts is particularly helpful for you. And I think based upon some of the answers that you've given, that I think we could probably come up with maybe a third way that the commission could support. So if they were willing to do that, would you be willing to give us an extension of time?
Excuse me, Commissioner Schrainer, I believe this one has at least, is it two more weeks? I'm going to ask OGC.
Oh, I thought it was up today. Sorry.
Mr. Lutz.
Sorry. Yeah, the deadline's May 17th.
Oh, good. Okay. Then we have time. Okay. Thank you, Mr.
No commission meetings before then, but yes.
Okay.
Excuse me, Commissioner Schrainer.
That's okay. If we have a little bit of time to work on it, that's great.
I didn't want to interrupt your questioning, or if you'd like to.
I'm finished.
Okay. Are there any other commission questions? I do have one, if I could. Mr. Holtzman, you've mentioned several times that the primary or principal purpose is outreach, but there is also the secondary benefit for as a tool for solicitation.
Yes. Okay. Yes, that is correct.
And but the higher the segment, that means that that's possibly the higher contributor. The example that you provided in your request gave us a difference in reflecting that a higher number would be a higher contributor. Is that correct?
Sorry, I'm not sure I'm following the question.
So I believe in your list, in the example you provided, different contribution amounts. I don't have it in front of me, apologies, but and then for a higher contribution amount, the score was higher based on the two segments.
That's correct.
So I would attempt to, is that, I don't want to ask you how you create the score, because that's company secrets. But in the higher the number means a higher contributor, at least in that group of lists. And like you said, we don't know who in fact gave, but in that list, there's possibly, if I asked or if I created a segment that had a 65 score, that these are likely to include some contributors that were higher givers or contributors.
That is also correct. The one difference is you can't, you can't like cherry pick exactly the highest contributors. We are just, but you are right. The higher score means that, you know, those voters we have, our models determined are higher contributors in general.
Okay. And as you said, it's not, you can't pick which one on that list were contributors. So, but we do have on that list, some individuals were higher contributors.
Yeah, that's true. There is one thing that we haven't discussed today, which is the component where we're scoring voters or similar voters. So what we also do is we also use like similar demographic or geographical fields to grab contribution data from voters that are similar to our groups of voters. So there's a chance that some of our scores reflecting voters that aren't actually in the segment, but are similar to the voters that are in the segment. So to give an example, if our segment is people aged 25 to 35, we may use people aged 25 to 35 in a different region, or maybe we decide to widen the age range a little bit, 25 to 40, and we figure out that this group has a higher voter score. It doesn't necessarily mean that anyone in our segment actually has it. It just means that they are more prone to be contributing to campaigns.
So a candidate could decide that based upon a higher segment score, that would be a segment to focus its efforts on, possibly for not only outreach, but solicitations.
Yes, that's correct.
And that contribution information, even though it creates the score, is taken from FEC database.
Yep, that is correct.
Thank you. Are there any further questions? I don't want to. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's not really a question. Based on your questions, I think I'm pretty much on the same page that you're on, Madam Chair. I came in today prepared to support draft A. It seems to me that Mr. Holtzman has told us, both in his request and here today, that he's going to use FEC data and this product is going to be used for solicitation, not exclusively for solicitation, but it will be used for solicitation. And I think that pretty much answers the question. Having said that, if my colleague, Commissioner Traynor, wants to try to come up with another path forward, I'm happy to consider that. We have more time. I'm open.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. I too, Commissioner Traynor, would like the additional time to work on an additional draft. I want to make sure that we have an opportunity for all commissioners to ask any questions, because we appreciate Mr. Holtzman and Ms. Schott taking their time to be with us today. I don't see anyone raising their hand, so I do want to say thank you very much for being here today. And we do have an additional time, and this will be on the next open meeting agenda. So thank you for your time today. Thank you. The next item, we will move on to the next item on our agenda. It is proposed amendment to Directive 17, and we have Mr. Larry Calvert, Nevin Stepanovic, and Lisa Stevenson from the Office of General Counsel here to discuss that matter. Counsel? If you like, please proceed.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. And we are very pleased that the Commission is able to consider today this proposal for a modest change to Directive 17 that would address a problem that is relatively small and rare, but annoying when it happens. On occasion, the Commission knows it's going to split on a matter. And for some reason, usually a deadline in the advisory opinion process or in a litigation matter, Commission needs to certify the split vote prior to the next regularly scheduled commission meeting. And so what usually happens is that the substantive proposition will circulate on a very short tally vote, and the commissioners that approve of the proposition will approve it on tally, and the commissioners opposed will object for the record only. Under Directive 52, an objection for the record only, unlike a regular objection, does not have the effect of calendaring the item for a commission meeting. The problem we run into is an arguably conflicting provision of Directive 17, which provides that an item circulated on tally will automatically be placed on a meeting agenda if it fails to garner four affirmative votes, even if there are no live or regular objections. And this defeats the purpose of circulating the matter on a short tally for sort of a prearranged split ahead of whatever deadline is looming. So the workaround up to this point has been that the circulation of a second memo on a short tally, recommending that notwithstanding Directive 17 and 52, the commission direct the secretary to certify the first vote forthwith. All our proposal today would do is eliminate the second step. It provides simply that on any tally vote where there are four or fewer than four approvals, and every commissioner who does not approve either objects for the record only or recuses, the secretary is to go ahead and certify the vote. For those who might worry about this leading to outcomes that they would not like, we really don't think there's a danger of that, because all any commissioner would have to do to prevent the certification from happening would be to file a live objection or a no vote by ballot or simply not to vote. This modest change would save some time in instances where time is already of the essence, and would avoid needless work for commissioners and staff, especially for our already overburdened secretary's office. And so we recommend its adoption.
Thank you, Mr. Calvert. Are there any questions for Mr. Calvert, OGC? None.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Vice Chair.
Would it be appropriate for me to make the motion at this time?
Please do.
In that case, with my thanks to the Office of General Counsel, I move the adoption of agenda document number 17-06-A.
Thank you, Vice Chair. The Vice Chair is so moved. Is there a discussion on this motion? Seeing none, call the question. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion passes with five voting in favor, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Weintraub, Commissioner Cooksey, Commissioner Traynor, and myself, and one vote against, Commissioner Walther. I say thank you very much to OGC. The next item that we have on the agenda is the Draft Legislative Recommendations 2021, and we have Dwayne Pugh and Amy Pike from the Office of Congressional Legislative and Intergovernmental Affairs here to discuss the matter. So, Mr. Pugh, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, commissioners. Before you today are 14 draft legislative recommendations for 2021 listed in agenda document number 21-24A. Developing these recommendations started with potential topics suggested by FEC staff and commissioners, and it provided an opportunity for commissioner input and direction early in the process. The commission has not approved legislative recommendations since December 2018. The 11 recommendations approved then are again before the commission today, with some changes to some of those, plus three more that were not part of the 2018 package. One of those is to make the administrative fine program permanent. In 2018, The Congress had just acted on previous commission legislative recommendations by passing the sixth extension of that program. So the commission did not renew this recommendation at that particular time. In addition, we have two new recommendations. One concerns disclosure related to recurring contributions, and the other would provide the commission with some additional time to set reporting deadlines related to special elections, which was a suggestion from FEC staff, by the way. Commissioner Weintraub also circulated agenda document 2124A1 on legislative recommendations as well. Once the commission has approved legislative recommendations, we will provide them to the administration and to Congress. I'd like to thank the chair for making this project a priority for the commission consideration early in the year. I'd also like to thank all the commissioners and, as always, my colleagues for their contributions to this document. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Pugh. Are there any questions for council? Commissioner Weintraub?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to, first of all, apologize to my colleagues for throwing a new iteration of this at them last night at the last minute. I had been, I knew all along, and I think my colleagues knew, that I was not prepared to support everything that was on the original draft. And I was originally planning on making a motion that would say, you know, move to approve this document except for blah, blah, blah. And then I decided it would actually be simpler to just create the thing that that I would be prepared to support, which is, there's nothing new. There's absolutely nothing new in my document. It just deletes a couple of things that that I couldn't support. I'd be happy to go into detail if anybody would find that helpful as to why I made the deletions that I did. But the document that I sent around, with the exception of a couple of small deletions, is identical to the document that Mr. Pugh and his fine staff put together for us. I want to thank the staff for all their hard work on this, and thank the staff that managed to get my document up on the website last night, which was a pretty impressive turnaround. I'm hoping that we can have a unanimous decision on the LegRex. I think that would send a nice message. And I think there's a lot of good stuff in this package. There are some oldies, but goodies, like the recommendation that that Congress expand the personal use restrictions to all political committees. That's a suggestion that previous commissions have been unanimous on, and I hope that this commission will continue to be unanimous on. And then, as Mr. Duane pointed out, some new suggestions, such as making sure that when donors are making recurring contributions, that they understand what they're doing and they're making those contributions knowingly and voluntarily. And if they change their minds, they can get out of it. So I think it's a good package, and I'm prepared to move adoption at the appropriate time of agenda document 24-24A1, and I hope to get my colleagues' support on that.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub.
I'm sure.
If I may, Vice Chair, I want to say thank you to the entire commission for working together to move this forward. I did express that this was a priority of mine, knowing that we have not had an opportunity to put these out, although it was not for a lack of effort amongst all the commissioners at the time. So I do want to say thank you to the group that's on the screen now. It is Public Service Recognition Week, so that's my opportunity to say thank you to all of you. But before we do close today, I will be taking the opportunity to say thank you publicly to our staff. But thank you to the vice chair specifically, because there were a lot of negotiations and conversations between the two of us. And it's always helpful when you can reach across. So excuse me for interrupting, Vice Chair, but please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I share all of that, and my thanks to the commissioners who made their objections known before documents were publicly circulated. I would move the adoption of agenda document 21-24-A1.
Excuse me, I didn't realize I was muted. The vice chair is moved. Is there a discussion on the motion? Seeing none, we'll call the question. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
The motion passes 6-0. It was adopted, 6-0. I did say before we go to that magic question, thank you, Mr. Pugh, for all your efforts on this. It is Public Service Recognition Week, and behind closed doors, the commission has made full efforts to recognize every staff division when they've had an opportunity to speak in front of a closed meeting. But I think I'm going to pull up some of my grandmother. We've all heard this phrase, you praise in public and chastise in private. And that might be a good old Southern phrase that no one's heard before. So if you haven't, then welcome to my world. But I think it's also important to let people know how much you appreciate them, not just inside the halls, but outside. We are all joined together, finally having a quorum after years of not having a full complement of six commissioners. And we're all different people. We all have different ideas and bring different nuances to the job. But I think one thing that we truly all agree on is an appreciation for the hard work that our staff does and how they have managed to keep this ship going and moving forward despite the lack of a quorum and a backlog of work, and they have all pushed through diligently. So I do want to take the opportunity to say thank you publicly to them. And I want to speak on behalf of the commission, but I also want you, if you would like to unmute and say that, feel free to do so. It never hurts for people to know how much they're appreciated. So before we close this out, if any commissioner would like to express their own sentiments, please do.
Madam Chair.
Vice Chair.
As unaccustomed as I am to public speaking, I think it does make some sense to have the Republican vice chair join you unanimously on this matter as well. The staff has already seen my words in print. I meant every one of them. I know that my colleagues, both with and without a partisan affiliations, agree with every word that the chair and I have said throughout all of this. And I think that it's especially appropriate that we're saying this at the end of a meeting where there have been not one, but two processes that were very much staff driven, where the six of us are well aware of how comparatively seamlessly the processes went. And that may not be something the public necessarily sees, but I think it does reflect greatly on the quiet dedication of the staff in this building. My thanks as well, with my own gloss, though obviously echoing the chair.
So thank you. I apologize for putting you on the spot, Vice Chair. And you say you're not used to public speaking, but you do it very well. So again, thank you to our staff. I will now turn to the question that I'm sure all of you have been waiting for. Mr. Staff Director, are there any management or administrative matters the commission needs to discuss today?
Madam Chair, there are no such matters.
Well, thank you very much. This meeting stands adjourned.